Moving on to agenda item number four, it's a discussion item. Something we've been doing now for the last several months is discussing our legislative agenda for the upcoming session. And this will be led by Kobe Chase, our Legislative Affairs Director. Kobe?
Good morning. My name is Kobe Chase, and I'm the Department Director of Legislative Affairs. I almost said affairs. My appearance before you today will be brief. I'm here to...
Oh, no. There's no way.
Well, it's my intention to be brief, at any rate. I'll be here as long as you need. I'm here to present you a draft report regarding the Transportation Commission's legislative priorities for the upcoming 79th Texas Legislature. And now I have to do something a little personal. Since this is our first official broadcast on the web, I promised my wife I'd say hello to her because she was going to watch me and tell me just how much fatter I look on web TV.
Can we all say hello to Julie?
Yeah, say hello to Julie.
Hey, Julie.
Hey, Julie.
Well, thank you very much. So appreciate that. Good morning.
How's the baby?
How was your Las Vegas trip, Julie?
Oh! What happens in Vegas stays in Vegas?
I did pretty well, Mike. I'm glad you asked. Look at that. That was worth the whole trip. It really was. When you can get something like 50 of these for $10, you give them out to all your friends.
I hope you ain't got Jefferson wearing one of those.
Yep, I sure do.
Ooh, the original Elvis.
We have gone through this before, so I'll get right to the substance of the report and the recommendations. While I plan to move through these fairly quickly, you may slow me down at any point if you have questions. And this month I brought visuals, so those in the viewing audience can at least follow along with the topics. Let me start with the significant legislative issues. First of all is House Bill 3588. As we have all been discussing for some time, the Commission of the Legislature needs to revisit some of the provisions in House Bill 3588. I'll touch on the larger ones. There are a few which are more technical in nature, and I will not bring them up here today. First, there are four main financial issues. The statutory cap on toll equity should be repealed. Second, it must be clarified that all toll revenue from TxDOT projects is to be deposited in the state highway fund, not just revenue from bonded projects. Three, present laws governing the use of any surplus toll revenue from TxDOT projects should be expanded. Right now, any surplus revenue must be used on another turnpike project in the region. It would be beneficial to allow surplus toll revenue to be used on a non-turnpike project within the same geographical area or, for instance, on rail. Four, state law should be amended to allow TxDOT to enter into pass-through toll financing agreements where we build the project and local private or public or private entities repay us. Next, there are two rail issues, still within the context of House Bill 3588. The present statutory cap of $12.5 million per year in expenditures for non-Trans-Texas Corridor rail projects should be repealed. In addition, the present $25 million per year in expenditures for Trans-Texas Corridor rail projects should be eliminated. Next, there's a need to clarify TxDOT's contracting authority for rail. Current law requires the department to use the low bid process, nothing innovative in the delivery of rail projects. And we would like to see that change into something that operates more like a CDA, or a comprehensive development agreement. The third big area is toll conversion and toll conversion revenue. Toll conversion revenue for TxDOT or a county is currently limited for use on that converted segment or an extension of that segment. It should be beneficial to allow the revenue to be used on other transportation projects in the region in addition to the converted segment or extension. Second, and this is important, the report contains no recommendation regarding the definition of toll conversion. None at all. It would seem, and this is my opinion, the opinion of my staff, and we can do whatever you would like in this report because you'll ultimately adopt it, is... I don't know if drawing a clear line right now as to what would constitute a toll conversion and what wouldn't would be productive. There are many stages in the process of a road. Is it when somebody thinks about it? Is it in the first design dollars applied to it, the first planning dollars designed to it, or when tires are actually moving across the road? What actually defines a toll conversion? I think there's going to be some interest next session in that. I know there is. There's been one bill filed to define toll conversion, and really all it does is prohibit one specific road in the Houston area from being converted to a toll road. And I think also, if kind of standing from the 30,000 feet level and looking at everything, the process seems to have worked in our opinion. No road has been converted to a toll road. The process as defined in House Bill 3588 is not broken. So I think there's still a lot of discussion that needs to be had. However, if it's the Commission's desire, we will attempt to put a definition in this report. So that's something we're going to have to tackle. My recommendation is a wait and see at the moment. Continuing on, and you can stop me for questions at any time. And still within the confines of House Bill 3588 are two recommendations on comprehensive development agreements. First is CDAs presently may only be utilized for toll projects. The ability to use CDAs for other state projects would enable the department to obtain the most efficient means of developing projects, providing the best value to the department. And second, the department's ability to use comprehensive development agreements expires in 2011. That sunset provision should be eliminated. Next is the next issue, RMAs and transit. RMAs, or regional mobility authorities, should be allowed to provide all forms of public transportation services. This proposal would allow RMAs to integrate all of their region strategies to improve mobility under the oversight of one authority on a voluntary basis. An RMA that wishes to provide transit services in an area already served by an existing provider would be able to enter into a voluntary agreement to do that. Again, the key word is voluntary. Advanced acquisition.
Hang on a second, Kobe.
Yes, sir.
Do we touch anywhere in the report on permissive legislation that would allow NTTA to convert to an RMA, for example?
Not directly, no. I would, my opinion, I don't know what the harm of that would be, but it would make sense that if you ran a regional toll authority, you'd want as much flexibility as you can, and it seems like RMA.
Well, I think we suggested it to some of the NTTA leaders during the last legislative session, it would be on a permissive basis, and they still, all of us get emotionally different during legislative sessions, and the reaction wasn't favorable, even though it was permissive. I'm just wondering, in the spirit of not hiding the ball, if we believe it's a good thing to lay the groundwork for NTTA and ECTRA and indeed CTRMA and the Alamo RMA. I named your RMA for you, Tom. The Alamo RMA. And all the others we have formed, well, those that fall within other toll authority statutes, it may be not a bad thing for us to suggest, recommend to the legislature that permissive language be passed, making that transition easier. Otherwise, we're all hearing the stories. NTTA, our friends at NTTA want a monopoly on toll roads in their areas, and the judge in Collin County doesn't want the transit systems busted up, and all of these things that distract us. Maybe we need to advertise to our partners at the local and regional level. We don't want to make them do anything. We just think it's good to lay the groundwork to voluntarily do things. If they choose to do it, fine. And if they choose not to, that's okay, too.
Something that would allow them to convert.
What I don't want to do is create an atmosphere of adversarial nature with particularly HECTRA and NTTA, DART, E. I want them to process that in our first legally authorized legislative recommendation that we're recommending permissive things and cooperative things and partnership things, doing things together as opposed to, our way or the highway, pardon the pun.
Yeah. Yes, sir.
I didn't want to interrupt.
Please do. I can kick you that way.
I was going to back up a step further. Related to toll conversion,
yes, sir,
which has been a very confusing issue for the public. We do know for sure that that's going to be an interesting topic that's going to be discussed and kicked around quite a bit at the legislature, as it should be, it is totally clarified in everybody's mind. But one of the confusing parts of that issue has to do with whether or not, and I think what we have been basically saying, that is if you're currently driving on lanes that are non-towed, what we have been working with pretty much across state, is that we've only been tolling the expanded lanes and the new capacity or new locations. The I'm a little concerned under your toll conversion revenue that in here is a suggestion that toll conversion revenue for TxDOT on that converted segment, if you ever did really have a true conversion by our, the definition we are using, where you literally put toll booths across lanes and just tolled them, the current law says that you can use it to expand or extend. In other words, it stays basically on that highway. If we go in there and start trying to suggest or recommend that they expand that law so that if you do that, it could be spent somewhere else, I think we're sending a confusing issue, because basically what we're not doing is doing conversions. We're not doing conversions. We're tolling new capacity and new locations. We're not tolling conversions by our definition. And if we go in there and ask for the revenue of conversions to be used on things other than that highway system, I think we're going to have a really confused number of members. Because right now, today, in that big master plan that we've got for the whole state, there are no lanes currently that we are talking about going through a conversion of.
Well, perhaps that problem is, I understand what you're saying, but perhaps that problem is easily addressed by the suggestion two pages earlier, where we just simply, we ask the legislature to just define all revenues flowing to TxDOT or Fund 6 revenues and can be spent according to the Constitution and the law.
Right. And what we contemplated in this is, as we were moving through this recommendation, was once you've converted a toll road, and it should probably have the same flexibility as a new start toll road, especially in the hands of a TxDOT or the county.
And we understand.
But I certainly understand.
We understand, exactly, all of us on the podium understand the intensity with which people have reacted to the conversion myth. But we continue to believe it is valid to have that option out there for local governments and regional governments to turn to, if that's all that's available to jumpstart a project. In fact, the governor's made it clear to us he would never approve any conversions, but that's okay. I mean, that's his position, and that's the way he feels. That's fine. That's no reason to take away tools from a community, from a county judge, a city council member, or whatever. What's interesting is in the conversations that have occurred about conversion, Commissioner Nichols makes a good point. First, people are of the impression that we're out there converting lanes, which we're not. And second, become crystal clear to me is the lack of true information many in the transportation world have about the relationship of tax payments to the cost and maintenance of a new road. In fact, we've instructed Amadeo, I think, to prepare an extensive study on how much does a taxpayer really pay for a new road, what percentage of the cost ends up being allocated to the road, preliminary estimates. In fact, I don't want to put words in his mouth. Amadeo, are you here today? But what's the preliminary estimate for the average road? I'm not talking about the ones that we know pay off like slot machines, Katy Freeway, west of Houston, but for the average road, Mopac South is an example. That would be a good one that's current to the discussion.
Some of the early numbers that we're looking at, they're barely collecting enough money to take care of the maintenance and operations.
Okay, so on a percentage basis, if you take the construction cost and then the maintenance cost over a 40-year life, and you allocate the motor vehicle tax, the federal reimbursement, and the vehicle registration fee each year based on the miles driven across that road, what percentage of total cash is recovered through taxes?
About 50%.
So about 50% of taxes paid by Robert and I to use a new road built in our district cover the cost of building and maintaining the road on a 40-year life.
Yes, sir. Those are some of the early numbers. We're still playing.
And there are exceptions. Some roads, such as we know Interstate 10 west of Houston, because of the high traffic volume and the way it's built, taxes probably will recover its cost and its maintenance.
And of course, we have roads that we need for connectivity that never collect enough revenue to pay for themselves.
Yes, Robert.
I didn't disagree with anything you said, but one piece of that was that 50% of the cost was to maintain it over its lifetime, the word lifetime. When we did some lifetime studies, doing a 40-year lifetime of a new road, what it costs to preserve it, what it costs to build it, the thing that surprised me and most legislators that I've shown it to is that the preservation cost of a new highway over a 30, 40-year period of time is actually several times the original construction cost. It costs more to preserve it over 30, 40 years than it ever did to build it by several times.
Well, most of us that have been having to deal with this realize that something had to be occurring like this, because you couldn't have this. You know, our construction of new capacity has gone to almost, 5% in the last 10 years. And so there had to be something to account for that. And the accounting for it is more and more of our cash has gone to maintenance of existing infrastructure. Well, at any rate, my point, Kobe, I didn't mean to digress to Amadeo's part of the world, but we've asked Amadeo to do an extensive study so that House members, Senate members, the governor, anyone else interested in transportation can kind of look at something and see the argument of you're taxing me twice to pay for the road just doesn't bear out in most cases. That shouldn't change the fact that a conversion, the point that Mr. Nichols brought up, a definition conversion isn't appropriate. We just ought to be able to have the information for people to make good decisions about it. Okay.
Mr. Chairman, I have a question.
Please help.
Not on toll conversion, but Kobe, give me just a simple example on the RMA in transit. When you say an RMA that wishes to provide transit and already served by an existing provider would be able to enter into voluntary agreement with a governing body to transfer its operation to the Army. I want to make sure that people understand that.
In the case of perhaps, I guess, Central Texas, if the Central Texas RMA and Cap Metro want to enter into an involuntary agreement to handle regional transportation, I mean, the kind of the idea of an RMA and the philosophy that the agency is going is regions handle their transportation as a region,
right.
And that's not just roadways. And if it makes sense, and I'm under the impression that, for instance, CTRMA and Cap Metro work very well together. That's bridged a lot by Representative Crucey, who keeps that relationship strong and going. But there may be a discussion at some point. I'm not saying there is one here in the Austin area. I don't want anyone to believe that at this point. That it might make sense to have the RMA operate the bus system. And it might make sense if the RMA is operating a toll road and financing, using any profit, so to speak, to finance a transit system or other transportation projects. It may just make sense to that community, but this wouldn't force anybody to do it.
So it would help the local transit companies if the RMA wanted to share their revenue or put their revenue into public transit, and it would strictly be voluntary.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Good.
Absolutely.
Thank you very much.
Continue, Kobe.
As was just highlighted in the previous agenda item, advanced acquisition. TxDOT should be granted the authority to acquire property from a willing seller in advance of the environmental work being completed. Again, this should only be from a willing seller. No condemnation authority is being recommended here, and I think the discussion on the Grand Parkway highlighted the need for doing something like that. I think if you look back over the history of TxDOT, one of the things we wish, if we could travel back in time and change, was the ability to buy larger corridors, because there's nothing cheaper than the land you buy today. Next is local transportation planning authority. Again, that was also discussed at the county level just on the last agenda item. Local government should be granted clear authority to regulate development and identify transportation corridors. This is a two-stage process. First, TxDOT should be granted the authority to enter into agreements with local governments for the purposes of identifying the long-range transportation needs of the area and establishing future transportation corridors. Following that, local governments should be granted the express authority to regulate or control development within that corridor. And I can't give you an any better example than what had just occurred with Representative Riddle. Rail relocation. We currently may only provide for rail relocations on a very limited basis and only when necessary for a highway project. TxDOT should be granted clear authority to enter into contracts for the relocation. In addition, the legislature should provide the funding to capitalize a rail relocation fund through which TxDOT may issue bonds for the state's cost of these relocations. Please understand that a constitutional amendment is necessary in order to obligate the state to retire the debt from those types of bonds. In our recently adopted legislative appropriations request, the department has asked for $200 million in general revenue as startup capital for this fund.
Hang on a second.
Yes, sir.
Somebody started to say something down here?
Yeah, I did. $200 million in general revenue to look at moving rail?
To
before we have the authority or in conjunction with the authority?
Well, they would have to move in parallel.
Right.
Definitely.
And what do we estimate the cost of rail relocation around the state of Texas?
I can't do that off the top of my head, but I can tell you two things. One, in the Austin area, they are looking at, you know, moving the UP line out off of Mopac and putting it east of town. And I could have this wrong, but I seem to recall that was at least $500 million. And then right now in the city of Houston, there is, I believe, a story about it, a good story in the Houston Chronicle today about this. The greater Houston area is looking at consolidating rail lines and moving them out of the port, kind of Alameda corridor style. And that I would imagine that the state would want to be a partner in that. And that would cost, I have no idea, but it would cost a lot.
So we would be the sole authority in negotiating with the rail companies?
I don't know that. I would doubt it, but I don't know that.
Who would own the rights of ways as they abandon the right of ways?
I believe we would.
We would own them.
If we have a stake in a financial stake in it. But again, each deal is probably going to have to stand on its own, and one deal in one part of the state might look a little different than another.
I have some questions about this, but Robert, if you or Hope have anything you want to expand on?
No.
Not yet?
I don't know.
First of all, Kobe, I want to be sure your statement, please understand a constitutional amendment is necessary in order to obligate the state to retire the debt. I think what you meant to say was to retire the debt related to... related strictly to rebuilding a railroad as opposed to debt incurred to purchase UP's right-of-way, for example, and build a road on it, or both? Are we going to have a constitutional amendment either way?
Well, I mean, if you're using...
Well, let me give you an example. Statutory, the legislature gives us $200 million in general revenue and authorizes us to bond $10 billion against that to finance moving rail out of El Paso, Corpus Christi, San Antonio, Austin, Dallas, Fort Worth, Weatherford, Houston, big cities in the state. Why would we need a constitutional amendment to do that?
I think the amendment has to do with the issuance of debt. The amendment doesn't have to do with the ability to go in and play in the rail game, so to speak.
And in your visiting with different legislative members, or members of legislature and staff, particularly leadership, have you sensed a growing interest in the notion of taking rail out of urban Texas?
Absolutely. And it's been interesting, and it's been fairly recent, too. And it's because, I think, in large part, because of the discussions here in Austin and the starting discussions in the Houston area. People are over time, understanding more and more the beauty of the California experiment on the Alameda Corridor, what they did, and they understand exactly what happened there, we could make it a much more efficient process in Texas for doing those things regularly. And I think people are paying attention to it. And I think, in large part, thanks to the media, we've gotten a lot of attention on this. And with things, unfortunately, in San Antonio, with tanker cars spilling and some deaths resulting and things like that, fresh on people's minds.
I was just going to comment that in trying to come up with numbers like you were talking about, I think we are doing a study to try to make an estimate of that statewide, if you did a similar thing in each of the urbanized areas. And I can just tell you, it's going to be up in the $5 billion and plus kind of a range. So it's going to take, you're not going to be able to tackle it. You would have to tackle it with assigning a certain revenue source and bonding, something like this, to begin the process. But it will take more than that. It will take a cooperative relationship with the railroads themselves as well as the community, because those rails are in those communities in most cases to service the industries and businesses that are there, which those communities want to protect and keep successful also. So it will only work if we can come up with, in addition to revenues, a good working relationship with the rail partners in this state. There are good opportunities there.
In my travels of the state, there's one common denominator, and I haven't heard any negative issues regarding our initiatives to relocate rail. That is latched on or grabbed on by the broad base of people out there. Get it out of my backyard, get it out from behind the school. We like to have that gone. And now that's the public. Of course, you want to protect industry that it does serve. But
it's
spanning the gamut. It really has.
Oh, right, especially in the urban areas when you're moving lots of goods out of ports and you can get rid of all the at-grade crossings. I mean, again, back to the California experience, it would take literally all day or just about all day for a train to leave the Port of Los Angeles to get to the other side of downtown, and you can see downtown from the port.
Right.
Because of all the grade crossings, they just dropped it underground and moved right ahead and then get through in 15 minutes or 20 minutes or something insane. They, in that case, it was financed through a dollar tax per car until the debt set off.
But you know what we need to add to our list?
I'm
sorry to interrupt you.
It's okay.
Brainstorm. On our federal efforts, and particularly with Dan back there listening, we'll get him to help us, we should see if we can get our advocates in the federal legislation to amend the law to authorize FHWA to take the money they would have reimbursed us for doing grade separations and permit us somehow to take that same money and do relocates. In other words, don't we get reimbursed for a certain part of our grade separations, Mike?
Yes.
We ought to put that in our federal package, Colby.
I would only counsel that you think bigger than just the money related to grade. I don't know how, at the end of the day, if that would be that big a pot. I don't know. I would suggest maybe arguing for broader flexibility and being able to use your federal funding when it's decided in a community that rail relocation is.
And I'm okay with that too, but if we can't win that battle, I don't want to wait 6 years for the little bit. And the little bit,
right?
I mean, Dan would probably support that, would be my guess. What does he care if it's the grade separation or the rail just gets out of Brownsville? Either way, for him, traffic is at hand.
The clear authority would be great, because when I came on board 10 years ago, we were wrestling with, I believe it's a community called Manchester near the Port of Houston, I believe, and they would show you pictures that would just make you want to cry. These trains would park and completely block in this community for hours on end. Ambulances couldn't get through. There were kids crawling through underneath train cars to get their school bus. It was just, and Congressman Green, who was new to Congress at the time, was working like crazy to get money that we could spend so we could help alleviate that problem. And it's just been in recent years that we've actually been able to fix it. That kind of shows you the insanity of just staring at an obvious problem and a number of people can't do anything about it. And so I would hope we would at least start by advocating for complete flexibility in these situations to move these things. But
now, I know that the commission is aware the governor and his staff are fashioning their transportation package separate and apart from these things, and a key component I'm given to understand if his package might be having to do with rail.
Okay.
We are not stepping on toes or overlapping or, our agenda and his agenda, we need to move on ours irrespective of what he decides will be his policy for the next few years.
I would hope they're complementary. I would suspect that they are. Moving on, loan programs. There are two we tackle in this draft report. The first one is the department should be authorized to establish a state-funded state infrastructure bank program that models the federal program to offer loans to eligible recipients for roadway projects and to bypass the tangle of federal strings that complicate the current state infrastructure bank. Second is the establishment of a state-funded state infrastructure bank. You have to find a new name for those. That's complex. For loans to public transportation providers for capital investments. In the LAR, we have asked for $40 million from general revenue to capitalize this fund. Next is the Texas Mobility Fund. The last significant issue pertains to the Texas Mobility Fund. The full promise of the fund may not be realized if all it can do is one $3 billion issuance over the next 15 years. About $400 million in transportation-related funds, which go into the state's general revenue fund, should be dedicated to the mobility fund. Some examples are motor vehicle certificate of title fees, certain motor carrier permit fees, and personalized license plate fees. In addition, certain overweight truck fees and fees for taking a defensive driving class could be increased in those funds dedicated to the mobility fund. Increasing these fees could raise another $15 million annually for the mobility fund. I will now proceed to a discussion of those items of an operational nature, which are included in the draft report before you. Department on buildings. There is a definite need for the department to clarify its authority and responsibility regarding the construction of our department-owned building facilities. The department's authority in this regard has never been clearly spelled out in law and instead has rested mainly on attorney general opinions. The department should seek clear authority for us to construct, finance, and manage our buildings. Proceeds from the sale of department property. In a similar sense, there have been interpretations of law which provided that when TxDOT sold its personal or real property, the proceeds from that sale would be deposited back into the state highways funds. That was amended during the last session to put these proceeds into general revenue. This needs to be reversed and applied not only to TxDOT, but to the sale of Department of Public Safety property as well. Concurrent jurisdiction for eminent domain cases. The number of courts authorized to hear eminent domain cases should be expanded because of the large number of public improvement projects that are underway or in development in our populated areas. It would be more efficient to allow state district courts, in addition to the county courts at law, to hear eminent domain cases. Second lowest bidder. The agency has recommended that the department's authority regarding the awarding of contracts to the second lowest bidder be expanded from $100,000 to $300,000. This should speed up the issuance of small contracts. Employee recruitment and retention. Finally, there are two employment-related issues contained in the report. The two are paying a night and weekend differential for those employees who are required to work non-traditional hours, and then modify the statutory requirement that we post jobs above a B-13 pay grade outside the agency. This threshold should be raised to a B-17 in order to provide greater flexibility for reallocating and realigning the department's resources for effective management. And I would like to point out that the commission asked that we look into some bigger, broader issues, and Kathy Williams has done that, though those are being worked through the State Agency Coordinating Council, and we will be a part of a larger agency group that tackles those issues. I just wanted you to know they're not in this report, but they are being handled in a separate venue.
Will we know what they are?
Yes, actually, I can get those to you. I can't recite them off the top of my head. I brought them up a few months ago. I'll get those to your office, I promise you that. Are there any other issues that we seem to have missed that we would like in this report?
We'll begin with Ted.
What is the amount of dollars going into GR on sale of personal properties today? Personal property today.
I can't recall at the moment. I can.
And obviously the change in the law would be if you're going to buy advanced purchase right away and someday you sell off what you don't use, you want it to come back to the agency. That's
correct.
One example. Okay.
Correct.
Just curious on what it was.
On page 30 and 31 of the draft report, it goes through a set of numbers of between $2 and $3 million a year, plus or minus, I think, if I'm reading it correctly.
Excess property? Excess real estate?
Right.
And if you get bigger footprints on advanced right of way, it's going to be a larger number as you sell those pieces off.
Absolutely.
No, that's all I have. All right, Council.
Colby, the only question I have is on rail relocation. Through my travel throughout the state, I'm also hearing a lot of relief that we're addressing this problem. So my question to you is $200 million enough?
Well, you would bond against it.
And okay.
That would give you a kickstart of about
$200 million a year.
I think it's $2 million, $200 million over the biennium.
Biennium?
See, that's what I was worried.
But it's per year. Okay.
It'd be $2 billion over the biennium. Yes, $100 million per year, $2 billion over the biennium,
okay,
or $200 million over the biennium.
So $100 million per year.
Right.
Okay. So you're okay with this?
Well,
unless I'm told I'm not.
He's not necessarily okay. He's telling us that's the beginning. What Mr. Nichols is telling us, the problem statewide is at least $5
billion,
and I suspect it's higher than that.
Yes.
So I guess
the flip side is we probably couldn't logistically move them all in 1-2-year cycle. So.
But, I mean, are we I guess the question is to Mr. Behrens, are we protecting ourselves? I mean, is that enough?
It's not enough, but it's a start. And, if
we can
$100
million
a year, we could draw down $1 billion worth of bonds.
Okay.
I mean, does it appear to be enough for a 2-year period? I
think the way this would, in theory, work, let's take, we always talk about Austin, and it's a bad situation, but let's pick San Antonio and talk about it. In theory, what would probably work is we would have to reach some kind of long-term agreement with UP, which I think Brother Nichols is working on, that says we're going to commit to each other to study seriously how we'd relocate. In the end, what we're going to have to do, or the state's going to have to do, is build railroads for UP and BNSF and Kansas City Southern to move and use in exchange for giving up their assets inside our urban areas. We can try to slice it and dice it and cut it any way we want to, and I think this is exactly what the governor's going to propose. But in the end, the railroads were here first, and they will tell you that, and as much as we don't like it or like it, that's the way it is. And there's no reason for them to move. It, as we've talked about on this dais many times, there's really only three groups of people that have any value associated with that right-of-way. Them, us, or local government in Bexar County. Nobody else has any interest in that stuff because it's narrow and it probably has some environmental problems. But what would happen is we'd probably pick a project, San Antonio, negotiate with the UP, make our deal, and spend the next 2 years executing that deal and then be back to the legislature for additional funds to take care of Houston or Austin or Fort Worth or Dallas. So $2 billion is not enough. I think we all know that to solve the complete problem, but it probably is a pretty significant step.
I think El Paso had kind of an ambitious plan at one point.
It was $500 million. Good study.
Next month when we discuss that, we'll use El Paso as an example.
Yeah.
And then we can use Jacksonville and Weatherford.
We had a derailment. The entire issue of us doing the studies and being involved, to me, if kind of back up and look at the broader picture, it was only in very recent years, the last few years, that the legislature established TxDOT to be an agency to have rail, not regulatory, but rail, true rail involvement. I know there's another agency called rail that has the word railroad in it, but they don't really do a lot with rail. I would never propose to change the name, but it may come up one of these days. Anyway, but the legislature established it for us to be the transportation-related entity to work with the railroads. So as we began working in those things, that's where these issues. That's why we are now really in-depth studying the issues. The communities themselves have had these issues. If we try to go for too much money until something has been proven that we can do a successful job with it, I think it would be unrealistic. But if we can get a beginning amount of money as a revenue source to begin the process of working with the communities and the rail companies, and show good progress, then I think that the legislature may be more responsive to taking a bigger picture at a later date.
Kobe, I was reading. I'm sorry, Hope. Was there anything else?
No, thank you.
Yeah, I had. Well, first of all, just reemphasize, we don't want to cause confusion, or I don't, on this conversion thing. I know it's going to be an issue. So I just, as a reminder, on taking that other piece as a separate thing, I think it's going to be confusing. On fees, you were looking at some miscellaneous fees.
Mm-hmm.
And I know there's a list, and I've seen a list floated around that kind of stand out. But there is another fee you might want to identify and at least see how much money you're talking about. About 4 years ago, the legislature, in trying to resolve a property tax collection problem in cities and counties related to mobile homes, wanted some entity to certify the taxes were paid before mobile homes were moved.
Oh, right.
So they assigned TxDOT, of all people.
Oh, that's right.
Because the mobile home had to move on the highway. So we got the assignment to anytime somebody wants to move a mobile home in the state of Texas, we had to assign employees to check with the counties and school districts and things like that. Now, the legislature did realize there was a cost to that. So they attached a $20 fee to cover the cost of getting that. Instead of TxDOT getting the $20 fee, we only get 30 cents of it, which doesn't even come close to covering it, and the rest goes to general revenue.
Sounds pretty typical.
It sounds like a repeated pattern of abuse.
Sounds like somebody in appropriations wanted to. Anyway, you might take a look at that.
Okay.
I think the fee was there to cover the cost, which was the intent, but in effect, we ended up having to divert other resources to cover that cost, and it would be logical to include that in the fee.
Okay. I think I've commented on most everything I wanted to, Kobe. Go ahead.
I had one other item. For the last couple of months, I've said something about contracting practices. I know that was an issue. I still want you to continue looking to see if there may be some opportunities.
Okay.
Okay.
And particularly in the context of what the Fed does and what I think what other states do, we'd be interested in that. The one thing that's come to me since you started this that I might like you to do some work on before next meeting so that the other members could see the results. I was reading an article in one of the multiple journals we all get about transportation and vehicles and things of that nature, and there was a pretty interesting article in one of these trade journals about the Arizona method temporary license plates. And the reason it caught my eye was I recently had an experience with an employee who had purchased a vehicle and kept the temporary plate on perhaps a little bit longer than he should have, and I realized that we still have cardboard plates that dealers put on cars when they're taken off the lot. Have we ever done any research on whether that's an efficient system? Is it cost effective? Is anybody in the Arizona article I read, the director of motor vehicles out there alleged that the state ended up saving or recapturing around $20 million a year of escaped registration fees at the county and state level because of the old system that they replaced.
I know our motor vehicle division has looked into this. The temporary tag you get when you buy a car, the dealer issues it. I'm sure our motor vehicle division could provide you a sample one. They are insanely easy to counterfeit. Not only is it a revenue issue, these plates are used in the commission of crimes. They're used so you don't have to pay a registration fee, and all you need is a scanner and a printer at home, and you can make your own. And if I remember correctly, the Arizona system, and I could be wrong, but let me get this out there, is just so simple that there's no reason why you wouldn't do it. What it does is, those temporary tags, all they do is they put a date. It expires on this date. And it doesn't say this is attached to a 2004 Dodge. It has your little name you signed down right at the bottom, and an officer has to get up close, and it's a huge problem to figure out if that plate belongs to that car. In Arizona, what they do is the dealer prints, if I remember correctly, prints out the plate right there. It's hooked into their motor vehicle system, prints it out right there. It says this belongs to a 2004 Dodge, It has a unique number like a license plate. It kicks out the serial number and a clear expiration date, and it's just printed out on a piece of paper, and it's stuck in a plastic envelope and screwed onto the license plate cover. And so the officer can see from a distance that that's the right plate. He can call in that number to see if it's legitimate. And what they realized is they feel 100% compliance, that it cut down on people not registering their cars, never collecting the revenues they deserved and that they were entitled to, and it created a not just a bump, but a sustained level of revenue for them. And the other side of this is, again, these are used quite frequently, from what I understand at any rate, in the commission of crime, and it can be used. I mean, you can drive all the way to Canada with one of these, with a dirty bomb in the trunk or whatever you want to do. They're just not that sophisticated.
Take a look at that and be prepared to educate the commission on some recommendations.
Okay.
I want to thank you for your hard work. I know this has been laborious for you and Jefferson and the staff, but I'll say one more time, the Socratic method, we don't want any secrets. We want our world to know what's coming and what we believe in and don't believe in so that we can have a